The program is Walk With Me, Talk With Me, Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you very much for joining us today. We have a very special guest on the phones with us, and we're going to be talking about intention and a website and some books and just some great opportunities to, I think, go about the process of changing our world for the better. And I have on the line with me, we have Malika Chopra, and she is the daughter of Deepak Chopra. I want to welcome you to the program here, Malika, and it's a pleasure to have you here on the broadcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you have a website, and you have one in particular that we want to talk about, which is intent.com, personal, social, and global, as far as wanting to share dreams, inspire others, and find support for whatever it is that we're working towards in the context of these new paradigms that we've talked about here on this program over the last few years. And so let's start there, and we'll do a little background on you as well, but let's start there in terms of this whole intent, because we've spoken with a number of people about intention. We've spoken with Lynn McTaggart and various other folks, including Greg Braden. What's your take on this whole subject?
Yeah, so actually both of them are involved with intent as well. I grew up, my father is the well-known author Deepak Chopra. So I grew up in a world that was very much focused on setting our intentions and believing that, by setting in our intentions, we set the pathway to realize them and fulfill them. So really the goal at intent.com is, we've really created a forum for people to come together, share their intentions. We position it around well-being or wellness, but personal, social, global, and spiritual wellness. So the goal is for people to come, share their intentions, and then just find great content from voices around the world. Who are really creating new paradigms, talking about the practical tips in daily life to improve their lives. So we have over 300, now 350, I believe, what we call intent voices, who include, many best-selling authors and experts, including the likes of my father and Larry Dossey and Lynn McTaggart and others who are on our site blogging.
Well, it's impressive to say the very least that you've put together these this group of people and more, I'm sure, that are going to be joining and, again, working to transform our world. Some might even say that, we live in such a terrible time and things are so bad. And, I mean, we could go on and on for hours about that side of it. But we don't seem to want to spend a lot of time working towards solutions. I hear more negative commentary, not just the news and the numbers and the letters, but more negative commentary and opinion rather than, okay, we know that the streets are filled with mud, so what are we going to do about it? How are we going to change that so we can get through it? And how do we, what's one of the first steps as far as you're concerned in making those kinds of shifts?
Well, I think you bring up an important point. First of all, it is a difficult time in the world today, not just the U.S., but really globally. We're faced with many issues, not just on the economic realities of what people are going through, but also health, human rights, social rights, war, genocide. I mean, the list is endless. But I think we strongly believe that there are people in the world who are committed to finding solutions. People who are looking to connect with others to improve their lives and the lives of those around them in small steps as well, because all these small steps make a huge difference. So our goal really, and that's why we've kind of positioned what we're doing around intent, because we firmly believe that the first step in manifesting any change is to have the intention.
Mm-hmm.
And then, share that with others, support people with similar intentions, and then start kind of getting the content and the resources to realize those intentions so that we can ultimately realize them. But one of the, challenges I've seen growing up, I literally grew up in the self-help and self-development world, was that often people want to just only focus on the positive and the positive dialogue. Which I think is effective, but I think it's very important, and we definitely have taken the philosophy that let's be, let's recognize and discuss these problems to find solutions. So we want to be solution-oriented, but we don't want to deny the real pain and the real suffering that people around the world are going through, whatever their circumstances may be. So I do think it's an interesting time for efforts like yours and ours, and which, you know, provide people some support to say, look, you're not alone. You know, let's come up with creative solutions. My father's a big proponent of, you know, in every kind of catastrophe, there's an opportunity for creative solutions. And if together as a society we really think about these things, surely we can make improvements in our own personal lives, in our community, on the planet, et cetera.
Well, that's certainly what we are all about, as, of course, you are as well. And when we come up to this hour every week, every Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific time, not only are people on the Central Coast hearing this broadcast, but certainly worldwide, it's available on the Internet at our website, richarddugan.com. People can click on the Listen Live link. And that's a remarkable thing. I mean, I started my broadcast career when there was no internet. There was, if you were lucky enough to get satellite to get your message out, whatever that might be. Otherwise, it stayed pretty localized, unless you were syndicated nationally. And then maybe if you sent tapes back then around the world, you could do that kind of thing. But now we have the capabilities of really reaching people. And sometimes we don't even know who we're talking to.
It's amazing, isn't it? You know, that, and that's why we launched this company as an internet site, because what is fascinating to me is that we can create something that people from every corner of the planet, you know, we can see that we have people on our site from Mongolia and South Africa and Australia, from Zimbabwe and all over Europe and South America. And what's so enlightening is that people from all corners of the earth are sharing similar intentions to be good parents, to be more loving to their families and to themselves, to lead more sustainable lives. So really there's a community, a global community and a global dialogue that's happening now. And the internet as a tool, I think, is just a real powerful tool to manifest change for all of us.
Well, your website, intent.com, has several different tabs that break down into more specifics in those subjects of health. So you're dealing with medicine, longevity, beauty, cancer, nutrition, healthy living. I mean, the list goes on there. You deal with relationships, love, sex, work, life, parenting, and family. Balance. Now, there's one we could spend some time talking about in reference to happiness. You have massage and spas, yoga, meditation, inspiration. But the one that I'm curious about, and we're going to talk more about it as we continue here on the program, is success. And that seems to be getting a bit of a redefinition as we are faced with this new challenge for this generation. My parents were born and raised in the time of the Depression, the Great Depression of the 30s. And so they have a bit of an understanding, more so than we do, of hard times and how difficult it was.
Yep.
Now we are faced with, I would have to say, that potential, but it doesn't mean that it has to necessarily work out that way. And that's where intent comes in. And we're going to talk more about that. My guest today is Mallika Chopra. She is my guest. She is the creator of intent.com. You can go there and check out all of that information. We are also linked to her and that website at richarddugan.com. And we encourage you to listen live every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. If you don't get a chance to hear the program, you can always go to the website, go to the shows page, and you just scroll down to the date, and the name is there, and the link is there to the audio file as well. Stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices to make your dreams come true. Stay tuned.
Yes, and I do know how you feel.
This is Tell Me Your Story. I am Richard Divin, your host, and I am joined by Malika Chopra, and she is here talking about intent, intention, what that is all about, and what we can create through it. You know, Malika, as we took our first break there, heading into this nice long segment where we can really get in depth into this subject and the related areas that you're involved in, we were talking about the challenges that we face in this time, in this generation, as opposed to, say, our parents or maybe our grandparents during the Great Depression. And, of course, everybody's making comparisons to them then and now. And quite honestly, I don't see any comparisons only because this, to me, kind of like what you said, is a unique time in history that there have never been the elements in place functioning and working like there were back then, wherever then was, and primarily technology and the ability for all of us to connect, to relate, to commune, even globally.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've had many friends, you know, my generation has really grown up very blessed, you know, to really see thriving economies. And I think there's a lot of fear right now about what's going to happen over the next few years. But I think it's very different than the Depression and what earlier generations faced, because I think, you know, we're well equipped as a society. You know, our basic needs are there. I think it's more a change of behavior. You know, society has kind of, we've got used to living on credit, and we've got used to kind of so much affluence. So you had mentioned, you know, this category that we have success.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it's really talking about how do we find success in our lives in terms of balance, finding our purpose, finding happiness. So, you know, that, you know, there's obviously the need for material needs. We don't talk about finance and investing in the success category. But it's really thinking about how can we today use the different resources, the different tools, creativity, opportunity, to really create more balance in our lives. It's a very important topic for me because I'm also a mother of two kids. So even for me, success is very much defined around, you know, being a good mother and creating a successful business and finding the balance between those two things. So that's really kind of our perception or a window on the success category.
Yeah, I know that the dollars and cents, as I speak with more and more, isn't really factored into that. And that's almost like a side note, that unless you are happy doing what you're doing, unless you are joyful in your activities from moment to moment and day to day, it doesn't matter how much money you have, in spite of a wonderful little saying I saw on a card that said words to the effect that, you know, they say that money can't buy you happiness. Well, just give me some and let me test that out and see if it really is true.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, happiness is an interesting topic because my father has worked with many leaders and CEOs of huge companies, and, you know, fundamentally they're not happy. They're not happy in their relationships, they're overstressed, they can't sleep at night. And then you find other people who really are leading simpler lives. So, you know, I think money and affluence is not necessarily related to happiness. There was an interesting study, though, that came out about 2 months ago on social networks and happiness and how happiness really spreads when you connect with other people who are happy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which has been a great kind of validation, I think, for what we're trying to do on Intent, where we really are trying to focus on helping people and helping each other find more balance and happiness in our lives. But the idea that, you know, if I connect with another happy person, that actually can uplift my own personal happiness as well.
Well, there is an element of infectiousness, if you will, and we can use the word viral in this context in a very good light. There will be no vaccinations for this one. Yes, and sometimes it's because I consider myself to be a very optimistic person.
Mm-hmm.
And I share that with my boss and the people that work around me. But there are some that I connect with on a daily basis that I work to spread that message, if you will, of optimism. Not Pollyanna, it's always good, it's all good. But, all right, I understand that you hear what you just heard on the news, yet at the same time, you do have a job, and you have clothes on your back, and a home to live in, and food to eat, and a beautiful place called Santa Barbara, where we live. Can't you spin some of that into the commentary that you're telling people instead of the phrase is that I've heard is it's like dominoes. I hear the dominoes off in the distance. I hope they don't come here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I do think, though, that, you know, one cannot judge the fear that people are feeling right now.
Okay.
Because I do feel it is a very real fear. You know, there's a lot of change. There's a lot of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think, you know, it is, and, you know, whether that fear, you know, in each of our mind is justified or not, it is a real fear, and that real fear does affect people's health. It affects their relationships. So I think, you know, and these are things that take time, you know, there are no quick fixes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, we strongly do believe in the kind of value of connecting with others, of learning things like meditation, you know, where we can connect to ourselves more and find more peace and silence, and finding kind of different ways in which we can start basically getting a base set of security and values that will lead to more happiness and kind of overcome a lot of the fear that is out there right now.
Now, you said that you had grown up in the self-help movement.
Yes.
I've been involved since probably the late 70s, early 80s in personal growth programs, intensives, like programs like LifeSpring and EST and things of that nature. I'm not saying I was in those necessarily, but programs like that. And they began to evolve and change to basically help people to see the true, the real them, the real self, if you will, and then help them to go out and do what they really want. And
yes,
the term on being on purpose.
Yes, and in Vedic philosophy, it's called dharma.
Yes.
Yes.
That's something that has become more a part of, and maybe even the word dharma itself being used more rather than on purpose.
Yes.
In the West. Do you see, let me rephrase the question, how have you seen that inculcate or penetrate the social structure and the civilization here in the West?
I think it's very inspiring. You know, when my father started writing about what he writes about, you know, first about Ayurveda and bringing Eastern and Western medical philosophies together, you know, he was called the Indian witch doctor who practiced black magic. So we really grew up in an environment where there was, again, a lot of fear about a new way of thinking. I think what we've seen in the last 20 years is that, you know, integrated medicine, things like yoga, concepts such as dharma and meditation have all become more part of mainstream, not only America, but mainstream culture throughout the world. And so that has been extremely positive. I think the other thing that we've seen is that the sense of the personal has really evolved to the social and global, and I think that's why Intent is very much focused on personal, social, global, and spiritual wellness, because what we've seen with the green environment in the last 5 years, or sorry, the green movement,
mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, people now really are thinking about Mother Earth as an extension of themselves and the realization that we have to have a healthy planet to have, you know, our own healthy lives. Likewise, you know, human rights and social rights, and I think the sense of responsibility that the Obama kind of message of hope also brought to American culture. So I think we've also seen it evolve from just kind of this self-development, self-oriented perspective to one that is more social and global. So those are things that we are really excited to kind of tap into and support and, like, you know, engage more people in that conversation to, you know, spread that kind of message further and further.
Well, I have to say that the more people who are speaking it, the more people who are going to hear it, and the greater the opportunities are for us to literally move forward and out of this. And, you know, I sometimes wonder, because of some of the people that we do dialogue with here on this program, there are those who have said, you know, we really don't need to go through these hard times if we really don't want to, that you know, we don't have to learn through these struggles, that we don't need to deal in this dualism. And I'm wondering what your response to someone like that might be.
You know, I have a different response. You know, I think one of the things that I've grown up with is, you know, believing in black and white, the divine and the diabolical, that, you know, there are the two sides of any situation, which are both complement each other but also make it whole. So, you know, we experience happiness by going through sadness as well. I think over the next few years and what we've been facing, again, a lot of this uncertainty is very real. It's stuff that people, like I said before, people are really going through it. We can't just tell people, oh, you're just making a big deal out of nothing. You know, the reality is people are going through a very hard time. So it doesn't help to kind of philosophize it away, but rather to say, okay, what can we do today in terms of practical steps to, one, release stress in your life, help you think about what is your purpose, because there is an opportunity for many people now, and a forced opportunity if they've lost their jobs, to maybe take a step back and say, you know, what do I really want to do with my life? What is really important to me? I also think it's a time to heal relationships, and, you know, many people are hurting from pain in relationships from their past, and I think a time like we're going through now is actually an opportunity to heal those relationships and build stronger communities and bonds to help each other get through, you know, these darker times, and, you know, believing that light will always come as well.
Well, you know, some might be listening and saying, well, that's easy for you to say, Malika, because, you know, you grew up in that whole atmosphere of, you know, personal growth and development and self-help and optimism and all of that stuff. And there's your dad and he's writing about all this stuff. But I didn't grow up like that. And then they start telling their story of their hard times, which, again, is very valid. and so here you have somebody who's comparing their life to your life, or somebody else of, say, of some level of affluence. How can you sort of break down the walls that they have created of separation to assist and help them to see life, their life, as a good thing, as a wonderful thing that is to be experienced, and that they need to really be about the business of doing that without putting them down, or, as you say, judging their experience.
Exactly. So I strongly believe that everyone's experience is a real experience, and we all experience challenges and triumphs in our different ways. I think one of the things that I've seen since I grew up with my father is that most of the people who have come to my father over the years have come to him after they've been diagnosed with a disease, after they've lost someone, after they've gone through a divorce, after they've lost a job or faced a huge financial crisis. So, you know, often the first step in a journey of self-development actually does come from some sort of crisis. So I think, you know, we're seeing crises today in different forms, maybe more financial, but, you know, whether a crisis is something that's more personally oriented in terms of a relationship or health, what we see is that really is an opportunity where people are really kind of suffering, are really hurting, and they really, to survive, need to do some basic work in terms of really exploring, discovering who they are. Because I think, you know, so many of us, and I do this as well, is, you know, I'm so kind of just doing my thing with my kids and my work, and it's like I just don't even get the time to, like, sit back and think, okay, what am I doing? Who am I? What do I want out of my life? And I think crises is often an opportunity, and I've seen that definitely over the last 20 years through my dad's work, is that crisis is often that turning point for people, and it's often, you know, a year or, you know, a hard hard time to go through, but in the end, they do, you know, I've seen from experience that people do start coming out much stronger because I think they've really connected to something that's more essential about who they are.
Tell me about your family and that whole aspect of growing up, but also in relation to your family today, your two daughters, and the way that you saw your parents raising your family and yourself, and how that has really impacted how you feel about being a parent, and I'm going to use the phrase, in these challenging times.
That's funny. So my when I grew up in Boston, when my mother got pregnant, my dad was a resident in a hospital that where he couldn't afford to even have me at that time. So actually, I was born in India because it was cheaper for my mother to fly back to India on her return ticket than actually have a baby in the U.S. So we very much grew up in a time where my parents were struggling. They were very young. They had children young, and they were immigrants to a new country. And so really my father, for most of my young years, was a very stressed out doctor. He was miserable. He worked, 20 hours, 7 days a week. And so we really grew up in an environment where first my father was very unhappy and very stressed out, and he basically had his own crisis in terms of, you know, basic health and, you know, just realizing that he was not on a path that was making him or his family, his wife, happy. And so he began his journey really when he started meditating, and that was a very transformative, experience for him. So when I was about 9 years old, my dad started meditating, then my mom, and then my family and people in our community. So I really then grew up, kind of having this forum of people and meeting people from all over the world that were on a journey of self-discovery, because that was really what my father was all about. He only wrote his first book years later. Nobody agreed to publish his first book, so it was self-published. It was really a long journey for him to also become more of a well-known person. So, you know, I think I grew up in a very actually, quote-unquote, relatively normal environment in a Boston suburb. And really, though, one of the things that I learned from my parents, and it really was by example, is that, you know, they ultimately put the number one priority on the family and on communication within the family and making my brother and I feel very loved. My brother and I were kind of the guinea pigs for all of his random experiments and different books and things like that. And we used to type all of his books. So I think we did really grow up actually, hearing about everything that he said. But to be honest, neither my brother nor I had anything to do with self-development. We weren't interested at all. And so it's very funny, people always assume we ourselves and we are always approached as experts in this category. And we've always said, you know, we aren't experts in this category at all.
It must be in your DNA.
Yeah, and it's not. But I think for me what happened is when I got pregnant with my first daughter, it was a life-transforming moment. And I think what happened is that was a time for me when I started to really say, okay, I'm going to be a mother of this child that I'm bringing out into this universe. And, how do I want to serve as a mother? That was my first question. How am I going? There was a lot of excitement, but there was also a lot of fear. And so for me, that was really the time that began my own personal journey of self-development when I was 30. Which was really about who am I, where do I come from, in understanding that, how do I want to serve as a mother? And so that really kind of started my personal journey of self-development, which was really the process of becoming a mom. And I actually wrote a book on it called 100 Promises to My Baby, which really taps into, again, this concept of intent about, you know, how do I want to serve my daughter and myself and our family in this journey that we're embarking on together?
You know, as you describe your childhood and growing up, you know, I can't help but reflect on mine, and it's like, I don't see yours as that much different from mine.
Yes.
I mean, granted, you can sit there and say, well, my father is Deepak Chopra, and everybody knows his name, but when I say, well, my father is Les Dugan, it's like, who?
Yeah.
But it doesn't make him any less important by any means.
Absolutely, and you know, my father honestly only became well-known when I was in college. So, and you know, that's the thing, his journey has been one for the last 20 years, 20 or 30 years. He's been kind of diligently writing his books and traveling around the world and talking to people and working with people. So, you know, it's something that we've also kind of grown up with and seen. But my family's quite grounded. One of, you know, my mother is really the heart and soul of our family, who keeps everyone completely grounded. And, you know, my father's motto is always, don't take ourselves too seriously. So, you know, that's really been the kind of context in which we grew up.
Well, I have to say that it is absolutely wonderful to be able to talk about these kinds of things and also to share them with our listeners, because they need to understand that, you know, life is, you're with the parents that you're with, and it doesn't matter who their names are. You just have to go about the business of being who you are and loving your parents and letting them love you and care for you the way that they are.
Yeah.
And I'm Richard Dugan, and this is Tell Me Your Story. And we're talking with, if you've just joined us, Malika Chopra. She is the creator of Intent.com. And you said you wrote, you've written two books. One is, I believe it was 100 Promises to My Baby.
Yes. The first one was called 100 Promises to My Baby, which I wrote when I was pregnant with my first child, and then the second one is called 100 Questions from My Child, and that really was inspired by, again, my elder daughter when she was about 3.5 years old and started asking just question after question after question.
Only 100.
Yeah, and they're really focused on questions around, the question that actually inspired the book was when she asked me, Mommy, what's a bomb? Which is after the London bombings, and she had heard kind of the news report on the side when we were watching TV. And, you know, questions about death, what's happened to, you know, my grandmother when she died, where has she gone? And I realized that as parents, we really set the stage for our children's entire lives of asking and responding to questions. So it's not only how what we answer and how we answer it, but really the manner in which we answer it gives them, presents the stage for a lifelong search and a lifelong journey of asking questions and finding answers to, again, create more balance and security in their lives.
And I find that interesting that, and I made this observation some years ago, that as children we're asking all kinds of questions and we don't necessarily get the answers, but we keep asking. And at the same time, as we grow older and older, sometimes we're almost told not to ask questions anymore. Just, you know, we have told you time and time again the answer to that question. Stop asking the question. Start reading the books. Start listening to the scholars and the authorities and on and on and on. And I guess that's kind of where the phrase never trust authority, or always question, I should say, always question authority came out of the 60s. And that is as true today as it was then, but unfortunately it's done more from an antagonistic perspective, whereas as a child, they're just curious.
Absolutely.
Do you see most adults as having lost that childlike curiosity and just to ask the question for the sake of asking?
Yeah, no, I think one of the things that I also discovered while writing the book is that, you know, it's really life is a journey of asking questions. And we don't need the answers all the time. It's okay not to have answers. And I think that's one of the things that I've also tried to explore with my children is that, you know, some things we can answer, some we answer different ways, but it's also okay to not always know the answer. And I think as a society, you know, that's very much our kind of culture is that, you know, needing to always have the answers. Whereas sometimes life is about discovering the answers as well. So the goal with that book was really to kind of, how do we be more conscious as parents in terms of dialoguing with our children to really provide them the seeds for a lifelong journey of asking questions?
Well, I remember a television program that I was watching where the parents were a little concerned about their young daughter, and she was starting to ask questions about boys and girls and relationships and so forth, and even getting into the quote-unquote the sex talk. But what was so astounding was when the father went up to try to address the issues regarding the sex talk, she didn't ask questions about that. She said, no, I don't want to know about that. I want to know, basically, why we are here. You know, the ultimate question that we're always asking.
Well, and that's the thing. That's what I found with my daughter is, one, the way in which when we kind of turned the question into her, like, exploring things, I mean, her answers were just so beautiful. And I think children do connect to, you know, a sense of spirit and a sense of innocence and humor. You know, one of my favorite questions from the book is one of my daughter's friends who asked his mom, you know, if all the good people go to heaven, why are we stuck living in Los Angeles? and so, you know, I think kids also ask these absolutely brilliant questions.
Yes, they do.
Are very insightful as well.
Well, let me ask you about your... if I may, about your religious or spiritual upbringing and how that plays into one of the things that you said, and the most cliché-ic phrase is, sometimes you have to give up the need to know why. In other words, yes, you have the question, but you may not get the answer maybe until the next life.
We were brought up really not religious at all. Obviously, you know, we come from a Hindu family. But the nature of Hinduism was that it didn't really require, and especially our family, there were no rituals or nothing that we did. I really kind of think we grew up more spiritual, and part of that was actually an exposure to all religions. So, you know, my parents, and I make a huge effort on this with my children as well, is to expose them to churches and gospel ceremonies and mosques and the Sikhism, and, you know, we take them to a lot of holy places and places of worship across all religions to really kind of give more of a sense of a connection with spirit or God. And, you know, they're always kind of exploring who is God, what is God. Both of my children, now my younger one just started meditation, so she's 4.5, and my father just taught her. And my elder one also learned at 4.5. And so we really believe and really have made it more of an experiential connection to something spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And then exploring different ways in which people connect to spirit, which may be by going to church or praying to Allah or, you know, going to a Sikh temple.
I know that it took me a number of years to understand not how to meditate, but why, in the sense that I was getting stuck in the form of meditation, which a lot of people do. They're trying to do it the right way.
Yeah.
But until I understood the why was I meditating, that said to me, well, I'm meditating most of the day.
Yeah.
And the why for me, I can't say this is for you or for your children or for anybody else, but for me it was to slow down at least enough to hear that inner voice, the still small voice, the voice of God, whatever you want to call it, your higher self, to hear the promptings, the guidance, and sometimes nothing more than just the encouragement to be told, hey, you're doing all right.
Absolutely, and I think that was, for me, one of the most important tools I had growing up, was the ability to meditate and connect to myself and something deeper inside of me, that silence inside of me, because in all the chaos and the uncertainty and, you know, the teenage years of craziness, is, you know, just kind of being able to touch base with myself gave me a sense of security and, you know, a source of strength as well. And I found that even with my young kids now is that, you know, when we're in the midst of a tantrum, which we have many in our household also, but, you know, being able to give my kids kind of a tool to say, look, don't let everything else control you. You really can kind of go to a place of silence and, you know, have more control over your own emotions or reactions to what's happening around you, because I find we're so reactive all the time. And, you know, if we come to a place of silence and self, often we're more empowered not to just kind of react to situations and circumstances around us.
Well, I just, it was a great, in one sense, it was a great relief to come to that awareness and that understanding. So then I didn't have to set aside a half an hour over here somewhere that I really didn't feel like setting aside to get in a particular position and face a particular way or whatever the ritual and the ceremony required.
Yes.
In order to what? And then when I realized, oh, okay, that's what it is, I'm going, oh, I can rest now. I can enjoy my life again.
Yes.
And I think that that's one of the things that we're trying to share in these programs is to help people to find those spaces and those places so that they can enjoy their lives. And we're going to continue talking about that here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm with Malika Chopra, and she is the founder of Intent.com. Check it out. We encourage you to do so. We'll be back in just a couple of moments. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we've been walking and talking with Malika Chopra, and she's been my guest for this hour. And Malika, it's just been a pleasure to have you on the program. We're not quite finished yet. We still have a few more questions and things to share and let people know. How can they get in touch with you to find out more about intention and maybe if they're interested in getting a copy of your book or books?
Sure.
And so forth, and maybe
so
even participating?
Yeah, so the way that we set up intent.com, the new site, is that we've pulled together the best voices from around the planet, literally. You know, people like my father and Larry Dossey and Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
I saw Wayne Dyer.
Wayne Dyer's on there, Ed Bagley Jr., really experts from all over the world. And what they do is they can write on our site and blog on our site. And people can go and follow them so that for each person, they can follow all of their articles and blogs. And so likewise, I'm also on there as a profile, so people can go there and become my friend, per se, and actually even email me through that kind of system as well. Not all of our authors are responding to all emails, but some of us, like myself, are. And, you know, it's just a very efficient system, but I think more importantly, what we also offer is the ability for the users, so anybody can come to Intent, anybody can set up their intention, anybody can blog there and invite friends, real-world friends, to follow them there and also connect with new friends. So I think that's the most effective thing we've been able to do, is really create a platform where people who are interested in personal, social, global, and spiritual wellness can share their ideas, can share their thoughts, follow leaders in the field, and connect with others who, you know, really have similar intentions to lead a better life themselves as well as for those around them.
Intent.com is the website. Check it out, INTENT.com. I want to ask you one final question. We have about 4 or 5 minutes. And that is, with all of this work and being a mother with two children and the daughter of Deepak Chopra, I want to know why. You could be doing so many other different things. You could be pursuing art or science. I mean, I was looking at your profile and the information there. I mean, I can't believe how educated you are. You could be doing so many other things. Why? Why this? Why does this matter so much to you?
For me, this is honestly my absolute passion project. I'm a media person and a new media person. After I graduated, I actually, and again, most people would not think of this for me, but my first job was to launch MTV in India. And it was a phenomenally rewarding experience. But in that process, one of the things I realized was wandering throughout the slums of India and seeing MTV on television in there was not my life's purpose, and that's what we talk about, success and purpose. And I realized in that moment many years ago that the power of media to influence and connect people from around the world. So I really made a decision many years ago that I was going to spend my time looking at media, but also how can we use media to improve people's lives in the way that I was most familiar with, which is this world of wellness and self-development that I grew up in. So, you know, intent for me is, well, it's a business more than that. It's really, it's ultimately my kind of purpose is to really create a platform that allows amazing people from around the world who are really dedicated to improving their lives and the lives of others around them, to create a platform for them to connect. So it really, I would say, is part of my dharma. And, you know, it evolves. It will evolve. And, we, you know, we're growing it very slowly and very organically. And we just hope that it provides value to people. And that ultimately is my personal goal.
Well, you talk about growing slowly. You've had it since 2005, the blog anyway. And
yes,
people
started with a small blog. We did start with a small blog, but actually intent.com. Mm-hmm. And it's still in a beta site. We only launched in September.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's kind of the evolution. This has been something that we've been evolving quietly for a while. And now with intent.com, it just has enhanced features and really much more support for community and users.
Well, I think it's fantastic, and I am greatly appreciative of the work that you're doing, you and your father, and hopefully one day we'll have him on the program to talk about his journey to the present moment and what he sees for the future. And we'll talk about a lot of different things with a lot of different folks on this program, but we are certainly grateful for you taking the time out of not only your busy schedule as this wonderful media person, but also as a mother with two kids.
Thank you.
Who I guess aren't feeling too well today. But
I know it's flu season right now.
Oh,
so,
man.
They both stayed home from school today, but the nice thing is I get to be at home as well. So.
Well, there you go. That's a wonderful thing. Any last words that you'd like to share, a message of sorts with our listeners before we wrap up the program?
No, I think I'd just love to connect with people, and intent is a great platform. I'd love to hear people's intentions and what they're working on, and their dreams and aspirations, and most importantly, the ability to support each other in realizing our intentions is really our goal.
Again, it's intent.com. That's the website, and there will be a link at richarddugan.com when you go to the radio show's page and you click on the play button next to Malika Chopra's name, which is the link to her website. You can hear the interview again. You can go to her website. You can become a member of that wonderful society, if you will, and that community, and begin the process of corresponding, if you will, and communicating and changing, sharing ideas that will change your life. You're going to get ideas. We've gotten ideas from you today, Malika, that are going to change our lives. And we'll use some of them. Some of them we won't incorporate. But, you know, nonetheless, we've been changed, and we thank you very much for that.
Great. Thank you very much.
I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story. Join us every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. for new paradigms for a new world, changing, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices so you can go out and fulfill your dreams. Until next Saturday, love to Lal. Bye-bye.
Understand.